The author of The Reluctant Fundamentalist, Mohsen Hamid, will be at the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts tonight to talk about his new novel, The Boldly Imagined Tale of a Poor Boy's Quest for Wealth and Love. How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia is the, quite frankly, astonishing and riveting tale of a man's journey from impoverished rural boy to corporate tycoon. And it steals its shape from the business self-help books devoured by ambitious youths all over rising Asia. It follows its nameless hero to the sprawling metropolis, where he begins to amass an empire built on that most fluid and increasingly scarce of goods, water. Yet his heart remains set on something else, on the pretty girl whose star rises along with his, their paths crossing and recrossing, a lifelong affair sparked and snuffed and sparked again by the forces that careen their fates along. It is a terrific novel, How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Mohsen Hamid to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. It'll be nice to have you in town tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Give us a sense of how you came to this particular story and also this particular structure of looking at self-help books.
Well, I started to think that maybe novels are a kind of self-help book. As a writer, when I sit down to write a novel, I'm doing something that I think is making myself happier, less worried, less concerned, less freaked out by life in Pakistan generally. And I also think when I read books, it's a way to go outside myself. So I started thinking that maybe novels are a kind of self-help book. And in Pakistan, where I live, people are devouring self-help books on how to get rich, how to be a good husband, how to be a good father, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where the idea for the type of book came from. And in terms of what it is, the idea was to use this love story between this man and a woman that lasts their whole lives to really cut apart and check out different sections of society in Pakistan, but in Asia more broadly.
Because not only do you have that wry look at the self-help genre, but there's also, as I mentioned in the introduction, this very tender love story that is set in a very turbulent place.
It's interesting because in Pakistan, where I live, there's this whole genre of Sufi poetry. And Sufi poetry is basically a traditional form of Muslim poetry where love stories are used to communicate, you know, how one should relate to the universe and to God. And so the idea of a love story told to you as a basic type of fiction, a basic type of poetry, has always been there in my mind. And it's sort of an antidote to and very different from, I think, a lot of popular conceptions about the place and about religion generally.
With that said, you never identify it as Pakistan.
No, I intentionally try to have it not be Pakistan, even though I've written it imagining the place as Pakistan, because it's really the story of the billions of people who are moving from the countryside to the cities all over the world, whether it's Lahore or Caracas or Sao Paulo or Lagos or Johannesburg. All over the world, poor people are moving to these cities, and it's this huge transformation and this really unsettled time. So I wanted to write a book about that generally and not have it be pinned down to Pakistan.
I also found it curious that you seem to keep it all fresh, do not use names, because many of those names, I assume, could be quite loaded.
I think that's exactly right. For me, when I moved back to Pakistan a few years ago, I realized that a lot of what I thought about the place was what I'd been told by other people, even though I've lived there for much of my life. And to see it fresh, I thought, you know, maybe I should just stop using words like Pakistan, Islam, mosque, and just describe actual human beings going about their lives and seeing what I see when I try to describe the world that way. And also, I didn't want to really have something that was so particularized and focused on Pakistan, but rather something the reader can enter into and imagine it being their own city.
This follows basically an entire life. And that, did that appeal to you of looking to this cradle to grave, if you will, notion of what happens?
It did appeal to me because I think that the book, you know, is a sort of mock self-help book. It pretends to tell you how to get filthy rich, and it kind of does tell you that. But what this market-based sort of wealth quest doesn't give you, because the market is all about growth, having more money, having more assets, is that human life is also about loss. And if you want to follow the trajectory of loss in a human life, you have to follow it from beginning to end as you get frailer, older, weaker, as mortality gets closer to you. So I wanted to write this novel that sort of pretended to be a growth story, but really was a story about how to cope with and deal with loss.
The story is told in the second person, and how much of it was set up by the idea of doing this mock self-help book that went to that voice?
You know, the interesting thing is that the second person obviously does fit with the self-help book genre, but also it, for me, emphasizes what's sort of special about the novel and about written fiction, which is that when you watch a movie or you see something on screen, you're seeing a very pre-imagined form of entertainment. But when you read a book, you are, you know, seeing words on a page, and you're making those words in your imagination into people and emotions and images. And so I think the reader is kind of like a character in books. And the second person form seemed like a natural way to invite the reader to be a character in this book.
When you think of this as your third novel, what was it about? What do you think you have seen as your maturation as an author, where you're doing things now that perhaps you couldn't have done in your 20s or 30s?
You know, each time I try to write a book, that's a book I don't know how to write. So I spend 6 or 7 years flailing around and getting it wrong, and eventually try to figure the thing out. But as a human being, I'm 41 now, and I'm recently a father. I have 2 kids. One is 3 and one is just less than 1 year old. And I'm living in Pakistan, very close to my parents, who are now getting on in years. And so I think, in a way, the biggest change in me has come from moving up a generation and being in between young children and older grandparents. And I think my previous novels had focused much more on a single slice of life, people in their 20s or 30s, whereas now I do feel maybe equipped to talk about a much broader slice of human life in terms of youth and age.
Do you think this novel would be different if you hadn't written it in Pakistan? Which is another way of asking, is there an impact that writing in a turbulent place has on you?
I'm sure it would be different. I mean, this is the first novel I've written fully living in Pakistan. I've written parts of my first 2 there, but much of them were written in New York or London. And I think a turbulent place, you know, does factor into the fiction, into the writing. Things feel insecure. And also, you don't want the world to be like this. And when you don't want the world to be like this, the incentive to create an imaginary world, to enter a fictional world, is stronger. So certainly, I think a big part of the impulse to write it and the way it was shaped was the context it was written in. But that said, my intention this time was to try to write a book that was open really to people everywhere, to use Pakistan as an example of the whole world, instead of a peculiar place that's different from everywhere else.
What do you think it was about the reluctant fundamentalist that struck such a chord with readers?
Well, for me, that novel, a lot of people thought The Reluctant Fundamentalist was a novel, you know, about Muslim extremism. For me, it wasn't. The main character in that novel never says he's religious. No violence takes place in the book. It was more a novel that allowed the reader to deal with this ambiguous situation of a Pakistani and American having a conversation. Maybe violence ensues, but maybe it doesn't. And it was a big open space, ambiguous space, where hopefully readers got to encounter some of their own stereotypes and ambiguity and concerns and fears. And hopefully that experience of not being told this is how the world is, but being invited to consider how you think the world is, resonated with people.
And now it's a film.
The film will be out in late April, yeah.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it. I think it's very good. It's an unusual film because you have, you know, these big American movie stars, you know, Kate Hudson, Kiefer Sutherland, Liev Schreiber, playing really supporting roles to a Pakistani-British actor called Riz Ahmed. And in many ways, the creation of that film, it's an Indian film director, Meera Nair, a Pakistani novelist myself, the creation of that film and the people working on it and the way they work together in some ways feels like an antidote to the problems that the film is talking about.
Very much so. And also it is something that I assume will bring you an entire new audience with this novel as well as with the film. It brings new readers along as well.
I think it does do that. I'm a little nervous because I think film and books are really very different from each other.
Of course.
But that said, there's no doubt that film has enormous reach. And in terms of introducing this story to a much broader range of people, I'm excited for that to happen.
I love reading this novel because it seems at its core there is a simplicity to it, and yet I could see that a sentence could take you hours if you let it.
When I was in college in the States, I took a creative writing course with Toni Morrison. And one thing that she used to do was she would read our work out loud to us. And when she read your work, it sounded like fantastic, like a masterpiece, even if it wasn't very good. And the thing I took away from that course, above everything else, was how important it is to read your work out loud. So for me, when it comes to sentences, much of my day is spent with a printout of my manuscript, just reading out, you know, sentence after sentence, paragraph after paragraph, trying to edit it with my ear instead of my eye. And you know, basically by repeating stuff, saying aloud and seeing, does it flow? Trying to pick the pebbles sort of out of the sand of the fiction.
You are going to be reading out loud tonight at the Odyssey Bookshop at 7 o'clock and talking about your new novel, How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia. It is published by Riverhead. Mohsen Hamid, I thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure. Have a good time in South Hadley tonight.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the novel is How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia. The book is published by Riverhead Books. You can find out more about the event tonight at 7 o'clock at the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts, by going to odysseybks.com. odysseybks.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.